Hello there. Today is Monday, May the 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. And coming up, a bomb scare at a British football game. President Obama speaks to graduates at Rutgers University. Donald Trump lies low, but it's not stopping the media's obsession with him. But is his likely Democratic rival on the attack?
And along comes Donald Trump and says, well, he doesn't really care. Let them all have nuclear weapons.
Also ahead, this movie just continues to blow up the box office. It's all on today's International Edition. We begin with the U.S. presidential election, Donald Trump's treatment of women through the years, the executives he's hired, and the beautiful women he's pursued, getting a look by the U.S. media, two of the country's most prominent news outlets, The Washington Post and The New York Times, both published stories in recent days looking into detail at Trump's past connections with women. Trump has kept a lower profile in recent days. He's cut back on campaign events and speaking engagements, but he does continue to dominate America's political and media landscape. International Edition's Jim Stevenson talked about it with VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman.
You might have thought that with Donald Trump lying relatively low in terms of his public appearances, he just went to Capitol Hill and said absolutely nothing in public. You might think that with him lying low that there would be less, media fascination or scrutiny. And that is certainly not the case. Whether it's the cold open of the Saturday Night Live, where he's regularly impersonated, or whether it's every talk show possible. You simply cannot turn on the television in the United States without seeing Donald Trump. There is this absolute fascination with the man, and it continues no matter what he does or doesn't do.
Well, if nothing more, he has certainly incited a lot of passions, either negatively or positively. Isn't that an old Hollywood saying?
I think it was, I don't know who it was, but I do believe someone said that there is no such thing as bad media attention.
Donald Trump certainly has no shortage of that. And interestingly, that's like free publicity for him all the time. Whether that really helps him or hurts him as the campaign goes on, I mean, we got 6 months to go here. A lot can happen.
Well, certainly during the primary season, there was this long period of time where he just consumed all the political oxygen. I mean, none of his competitors in the Republican field could get any media attention whatsoever. And I don't know to what extent that explains his dominance of the field, but it certainly can't help when he dominated every single news cycle. And that is continuing today. And I think part of it is that now that he's the nominee, he's getting additional scrutiny. And there are stories that are coming out. There's a brand new story concerning his dealings with women over the years. Donald Trump has had a few things to say on Twitter about that New York Times report. But with someone becoming the presumptive nominee, you naturally expect news organizations to take a new look at someone, to dig deeper into the person's record, and that is certainly happening. But beyond that, I think you have a nation where of people who thought, well, maybe Donald Trump will be a nominee and maybe he won't, but now he is. I think that there's a certain sort of fascination with this person that a year ago no one could have imagined would be the presidential nominee of one of our two major political parties.
An interesting facet as the digging continues into Donald Trump, there have been many calls for him to release his tax returns. Now, this is not a requirement for running for president. However, it's been done pretty much by every presidential nominee for the past 40 years or so.
We certainly have no idea what could be in the tax returns until he releases them. And as you mentioned, it is sort of standard that everyone who runs for president, if they once they reach that threshold of being the nominee, that they do release their tax returns. Typically, people who have become presidential nominees have been fairly well-to-do, and many of them have business dealings or book deals or finances where people are curious as to what their financial dealings have been. And it's considered a matter of transparency where someone is saying, I am seeking the highest office in our country, and I'm going to be transparent, and I'm going to release all of these things.
Well, meanwhile, Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton is on the campaign trail, and she continues to focus her attacks on Donald Trump.
He says he would use nuclear weapons. This is scary, dangerous talk. This is the talk of a loose cannon who is making statements and creating confusion.
6 months ahead of the national election, political surveys show Clinton with about a 6 percentage point edge over Trump. The winner will succeed President Barack Obama when he leaves office next January after 8 years in the White House. Now let's turn to what's trending online with our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee.
Hi, Lori.
Hey, G. So what's the buzz on the Nevada convention?
The main chatter is about the fact that they got kicked out of the casino hosting the event. Can you imagine? Not classy enough for a casino. I guess not everything that happens in Vegas stays there. The Nevada State Democratic Party announced Sunday that Paris Las Vegas Hotel Security said it could no longer handle the event.
Wow, I see. Okay. What was the ultimate outcome of the event?
Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was able to maintain her delegate advantage. She won 20 delegates to Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, 15 on Saturday. Before the convention, Clinton had an 18-17 lead.
So what's the public reaction like?
Supporters of Bernie Sanders are heavily criticizing the Democratic National Committee, or the DNC. They're arguing the initial vote was taken 30 minutes prior to schedule, and while the delegates were still entering the building, they're also unhappy requests for a revote were not recognized. Last but not least, they claim 64 of Sanders' delegates were disqualified without a chance to prove eligibility.
So are the contenders addressing the issue on social media?
Not as of Sunday evening. Hillary Clinton's latest tweet is about her plan to give middle-class families a raise, and Bernie Sanders, for his part, tweeted about the exorbitant price people have to pay for HIV and AIDS drugs.
I see. Okay, so what other news is trending?
It's yet another bad news for the environment. Nearly 90,000 gallons of oil got spilled from a pipeline belonging to Royal Dutch Shell, contaminating the Gulf of Mexico. Pictures of the contamination are making the rounds on Twitter and Facebook. Lori, back to you.
All right, thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the other stories making news at voanews.com. A key Boko Haram leader is captured in Nigeria. Military drones flood war skies over Syria and Iraq. Mind-controlled artificial hand close to reality. Activists say Africa's biggest gorilla is in critical decline. And Bangladesh police arrest an Islamist militant in the killing of a gay activist. You can find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. And International Edition continues. British authorities say a suspicious device they found Sunday at the Manchester United football stadium was not a bomb, but it certainly gave a scare and cleared the stadium. Andy Ritchie is a former football player.
Everything's gone. Game's abandoned, obviously. It worked like clockwork. Everybody was fantastic about it. And it's just a pity that, you know, this has to happen.
Police described the device as incredibly lifelike. After it was found, tens of thousands of fans were ordered to leave the stadium just 20 minutes before kickoff against Bournemouth in the final Premier League match of the season. The match was eventually called off. Meanwhile, a Ryanair plane headed for Manchester, Britain, was evacuated before takeoff Sunday due to a bomb scare. At an airport outside of Oslo, the plane was evacuated due to the suspicious behavior of two passengers, and a bomb squad searched the aircraft but found nothing suspicious. Police later said the incident was due to a misunderstanding. New federal rules announced Thursday have the potential to upend the multi-billion dollar electronic cigarette industry, just as it's attempting to position itself as an alternative to traditional cigarettes. I talked about the new rules and what they mean with VOA health reporter Carol Pearson. Carol?
You can buy them online. That's going to be one of the major obstacles to getting these changes made, because all you have to do is go online, click that you're over 18, and supply some sort of credit card, and you can buy an e-cigarette. However, let's go back to see what the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, actually did. There was no national law to prohibit the sale of these electronic cigarettes, hookah tobacco, or cigars to people under the age of 18. So minors could smoke hookah tobacco, they could buy e-cigarettes, and they could smoke cigars. And the tobacco companies were very clever in that they started marketing small cigars that were flavored. And the e-cigarettes also come in a lot of flavors that appeal to kids, like cotton candy and all these vanilla, blueberry, you know, all these other popcorn flavors that the kids would like to have. And it very few kids would actually choose something like tobacco-flavored e-cigarettes, whereas a lot of adults who are trying to kick the habit will choose the tobacco-flavored over any of these cotton candy or ice cream or whatever birthday cake-flavored liquids that you put in e-cigarettes. And while the e-cigarettes don't contain the same carcinogens as traditional cigarettes, they do contain nicotine, which is highly addictive. And I've spoken to pediatricians, and pediatricians say that they will see children come in who smoke both e-cigarettes and traditional cigarettes. Once they become addicted to nicotine, it's really hard to break. And they have been very concerned about the health of their patients who smoke e-cigarettes. There are also some parents, this will be a real clear message to parents, because there are a lot of parents who don't see any harm in e-cigarettes, and so they will buy them for their kids.
Interesting.
The other thing is that you have people like the American Medical Association, this group of doctors that is coming out. It has applauded the FDA's new ruling, and they're also concerned because the e-cigarettes have been sold to pregnant women as a safer alternative to regular tobacco products. And that's where the March of Dimes comes in, because their president said that the lack of regulation has allowed these products to be marketed and sold without limits, including to pregnant women and youth. And, of course, the March of Dimes is a huge organization that tries to control and reduce the number of children born with birth defects. So there are a lot of medical people who are very much in support of this legislation.
But I know that there are a lot of industry people that are giving it a lot of pushback, saying these are much safer than any kind of actual smoking.
That may be. I've known adults who have used e-cigarettes to stop smoking regular cigarettes, and they've been successful in doing this. However, you don't know what is in these liquid that you put in an e-cigarette. And I think there's probably no one that would argue that smoking cigars is safe for children.
But what about cigars and hookahs and other things like that? I understand those are also being looked at.
Yes, but this is the first time cigars have ever been regulated, and it's the first time hookah has ever been regulated. It wasn't that popular in this country until just recently. So now you can, you know, you have hookah bars and everything else, so you can go in and you can smoke hookah, which has real tobacco, and that is certainly harmful to anybody, not just minors. But so they're looking at, for the first time, really looking at changing or ruling against youth smoking cigars and hookah. And that's got to be in favor of young people's health.
I know that a lot of people in the industry, the e-cig industry, are concerned that it will cost them money, but I guess the FDA is weighing the cost to public health.
Yes, and you know, there are doctors, and including the American Cancer Society. We mentioned the AMA, the American Medical Association, and March of Dimes. Well, the American Cancer Society is coming out in support of this, too. They say that the health of the nation, no matter what the manufacturers of e-cigarettes or cigars or hookah pipes say, that the health of the nation will continue to suffer the consequences of any further delay in implementing this law that is intended to protect public health.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, we've got the latest on what movies have been killing it at the box office this weekend. But first, the top American envoy to the coalition battling the Islamic State group said Sunday that the U.S.-led coalition is making progress. Brett McGurk told a conference at the Jordanian capital that the increase in suicide attacks shows that jihadists are under pressure in the face of the offensive.
The caliphate, as they call it, this perverse caliphate, is shrinking. So they are very much on the defensive. They have not retaken any territory really since their operations in Ramadi going all the way back to May. So their territory is shrinking, and they are now doing these suicide attacks against civilian populations. It's not going to work, but that's what they're trying to do. But this is nothing new. It's not a new tactic. I mean, this is the nature of the organization.
McGurk said militants have returned to suicide bombing because the area under its control is shrinking. His remarks come as jihadist suicide assailants broke into a gas plant north of Baghdad, killing at least seven people in an attack claimed by ISIS. VOA's Victor Beatty asked Greg Barton, professor of global Islamic politics at Deakin University in Australia, if he agrees with the envoy's assessment that militants are, in fact, losing ground.
Broad terms, he certainly is right, and it's welcome news, but as ever, the devil's in the detail. We're talking about territory on the ground here that is dominated by two river valleys and then very arid land in between. I mean, it's sort of New Mexico, Arizona, you know, backlands are arid. So the fact that they've lost a quarter of their territory on the ground doesn't necessarily tell you entirely how the war is going. The important loss of territory is that northern border strip, northern Syria, along the Turkish border. Of course, they famously took the city of Ramadi and they've lost it again. But retaking Ramadi cost the Iraqis the destruction of the city. The big question now is, how do you take cities like Mosul and Raqqa back without horrible things happening to the people who are effectively, the millions, literally millions in those two cities, who are effectively hostages held against their own will? That's the dilemma. So yes, Islamic State is on the back foot, and they've been on the back foot for some time. Of course, as was noted in the article about McGurk, we are seeing a corresponding expansion of Islamic State activity into areas like Libya, into the Sinai, even now a stronger and apparently more meaningful coalition with Boko Haram in Nigeria. So you get all the indicators suggest this is a long, difficult struggle ahead.
He's talked about making progress in an offensive against both Raqqa in Syria
and Mosul in Iraq, as you've mentioned. What progress is he referring to? Those cities are still under IS control.
One sign of progress we do see is successful airstrikes on the outskirts of those cities. I mean, there was an airstrike last week in the outskirts of Mosul that was very significant. And the significance of that is that you don't do airstrikes on occupied cities unless you've got intelligence on the ground to guide you in very specifically and avoid hitting civilians. So that suggests there's probably been some gains on the ground in terms of infiltration by intelligence, by Iraqi and allied intelligence, and a sense of preparatory work for the eventual retaking of those cities. But, you know, in the case of Raqqa, so much depends upon the peace negotiations in Syria. And in the case of Iraq, whilst you have a stable government at one level, the occupation of the Green Zone the other week points to the fact that it's a very unpopular government that's struggling to maintain credibility.
McGurk also talked about the round-the-clock anti-IS propaganda campaign involving companies such as Facebook and YouTube. He said, quote, for every pro-dash Twitter handle, there are now six calling out its lies and countering its message. Is there progress on that front?
There's certainly progress. I'm not entirely persuaded that we're sort of making a 6-to-1 ratio. I suspect, actually, that can't be true, given the enormous number of pro-Daesh Twitter handles out there. We're closing the gap. The gap was enormous. They basically played on that territory unchallenged. Now they are facing challenges, and it's good that major companies like Facebook, YouTube are getting into that space, and civil society is as well. But, you know, that also, on that virtual cyber battlefield, there's a long way to go as well.
You can read more about the U.S.-led coalition's offensive against the Islamic State group on our website at voanews.com. President Barack Obama delivered the commencement address Sunday to graduates at Rutgers University, which had apparently lobbied for years to have the president speak at the school's 250th anniversary.
The truth is, Rutgers, I came here because you asked. Now, it's true that a lot of schools invite me to their commencement every year, but you are the first to launch a 3-year campaign.
The president urged candidates or graduates to pursue positive change in the world despite enormous challenges. Obama is also scheduled to speak on June 2nd at the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, Colorado. It will be his last commencement address as a sitting president. For more on the story, go to voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition.
I've been waiting a long time for this.
Captain America: Civil War continues to rule the box office in its second weekend in theaters. But the star-studded adult drama Money Monster also had a very good showing in its opening weekend. Jeffrey K. Howard of VegasFilmCritic.com joins me with details on all of it. Jeff, before we get to the new release, let's talk about the movie that's blowing up the box office.
Captain America: Civil War is just destroying, you know, not only here in America, but overseas, too. I mean, this is just an international phenomenon. And Disney really only produces a handful of movies now. They do Pixar movies, they do Marvel movies, and they do Star Wars movies. So there's a lot of criticism from Disney stifling kind of those original movies, even Hollywood themselves. Everybody's racing to do these Marvel and DC comic book movies. But look how much money they're making. And rightly so. Captain America, in my opinion, Civil War, the latest one, is just wonderful. It really is. And when I try to explain to people who are not really into comic books and all, you don't have to be, because, you know, everyone knows these characters, you know, their whole life. They know they have such a brand awareness. But what they've done, the Russo brothers who directed Captain America, have really given these characters an emotional depth that you're just surprised at. The action is not, you know, absolutely fantastic in special effects, but, you know, in a movie that just gets boring after a while if you keep seeing action, so it turns into a Transformers. But here, these characters actually are pitted against each other, Iron Man team and Captain America team, and there's a reason behind everything, and it's just really well done, and it's making a fortune.
What's it about?
You know, if you've been watching the Avengers movies and the past couple Captain America movies, you know, the superheroes are kind of like going out and doing good, but they're causing all kinds of damage and death and on a massive scale. They're trying to do good. Well, the countries of the world got together and said, especially with America leading the way, you guys are no longer just going to run around and do what you want to do. You're going to go where we're telling you. 170 countries got together, sign this accord, we send you where we want to, and you do what we tell you. And, of course, you know, Tony Stark, Iron Man, says, you know what, you're right, we got to do rule of law. Captain America says, no, wait a minute, you're taking away our freedom of choice. So the Avengers are split in half, and they're pitted against each other. Well, there's a known terrorist out there, one of the Winter Soldiers, still doing things. So how do you approach this, legally or as vigilantes? So that's the basis of the split and where all the drama comes from.
And it looks like The Jungle Book is continuing to do well, placing second. And the new movie just out this weekend, the George Clooney, Julia Roberts financial thriller Money Monster, as we've been hearing a lot about, got off to a pretty healthy third-place start.
And it's almost like a parody of Mad Money, you know, the Jim Cramer finance show that's on the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really top thriller starring George Clooney as Lee Gates, who's this really obnoxious TV personality who gives out financial advice. And his director is Julia Roberts. And some massive financial meltdown happened that he recommended to a certain company and lost $800 million in one day. So Average Joe, played by Jack O'Connell, he comes in with a gun and puts a bomb on him live on television and says, I want you to explain to me and everyone and get the guy in charge of that company why we lost $800 million due to a computer glitch. And so you can understand the movie plays out almost in real time. So it's got this balance between humor and tension. It's a hostage drama. It's a statement on Wall Street. And George Clooney really surprises you because he plays this total obnoxious character that, you know, has to amend himself for making his decisions affect people's lives. And Julia Roberts is phenomenal as the director. So it's a really taut thriller directed by Jodie Foster, no less.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Jeff. You can read more of his reviews and hear his YouTube interviews at VegasFilmCritic.com. And that is going to do it for this edition of International Edition. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. You can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Every year, the United States marks May 11th as Vietnam Human Rights Day to highlight our nation's support for promoting and protecting basic freedoms in that Southeast Asian nation. The U.S. and Vietnam recently concluded their 20th annual Human Rights Dialogue in Washington. The meeting covered a wide range of human rights issues this year, including the importance of continued progress on legal reform efforts, rule of law, freedom of expression and assembly, religious freedom, labor rights, disability rights, LGBTI rights, multilateral cooperation, as well as individual cases of concern. U.S. Assistant Secretary for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Tom Malinowski, told the press that over the last year there was a continued overall decline in arrests and convictions for those peacefully expressing their religious and political views in Vietnam. However, Assistant Secretary Malinowski expressed concern about the recent uptick in convictions for peaceful dissent. He said the United States expressed our hope that this would be addressed and that some of the long-standing cases of concern would be resolved. Among the individual cases raised by the United States was Nguyen Van Dai, a prominent human rights lawyer who was arrested in December on charges of spreading anti-state propaganda. In 2007, Dai was sentenced to 4 years on a similar charge. Another high-profile case is that of blogger Nguyen Hu Vinh, who was sentenced to 5 years in prison in March for what authorities called abusing rights to freedom and democracy to infringe upon the interests of the state. During the last week in March, Vietnam convicted a total of 7 activists. According to the latest State Department Human Rights Report at the end of 2015, Vietnam still held around 100 political prisoners. The United States continues to call for the unconditional release of all prisoners of conscience. Assistant Secretary Malinowski noted that the United States also continues to follow Vietnam's progress on legal reform necessary to bring Vietnamese laws in step with Vietnam's own constitution and international commitments. Vietnam's National Assembly is due this year to take up key laws, including the law on association, law on demonstrations, and law on religion, all of which could have a profound impact on human rights. Concern for the basic human rights of the Vietnamese people remains an integral part of the U.S.-Vietnam relationship.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.